A war over islands in the East China Sea hits big global businesses.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Several major Japanese companies are shutting down some operations in China, citing concerns about the safety of their workers. Chinese protests at the Japanese firms have gotten violent, and they stem from a fight over the ownership of some uninhabited islands in the East China Sea. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes is with us from Tokyo with more. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what's the latest on the dispute over these islands, which started this fight in the first place?
Well, the Japanese government decided to buy these islands off their private owners, and that is what essentially has set off the protests in China at the end of last week. And they've grown and grown over the last few days. Over the weekend, they got very big, tens of thousands of people out on the street, and a lot of damage being done to Japanese-owned businesses in China.
And they're protesting at both retailers and factories, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've been protesting outside Japanese diplomatic missions, so the embassy in Beijing, the Japanese consulate in Shanghai, but the real focus of rage has been on Japanese businesses. So that's been restaurants, department stores. We've seen very large department stores in some Chinese cities completely trashed and even attempting to burn down Japanese-owned factories.
And the Japanese companies involved, including things like Panasonic and Fast Retailing Company, have responded in some cases by shutting down their businesses in China.
That's right. I think there's a lot of concern from Japanese companies about their staff. There are huge Japanese investments in China. They employ hundreds of thousands of Chinese people, but also there are large numbers of Japanese people living in China working in these companies. And so I think the focus at the moment is just to protect their staff. And that's why companies like Panasonic have decided to close down their operations as a precautionary measure for the next few days.
And if this is just a few days, I assume it's not the kind of thing that's going to have an impact on the Japanese products that we buy here in the United States.
If it's just a few days, probably not. If it goes on for longer, then, you know, it could start to have an impact. I mean, if you remember last year with the tsunami in Japan where factories were closed down there for weeks, that had a big knock-on effect in markets all around the world. So, you know, it has the potential to have a knock-on effect, but hopefully not.
The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, in Washington today, experts from the National Academy of Sciences will be looking for ways to bring down the cost of treating malaria. The disease kills an estimated 650,000 people around the world every year, most of them children. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
The Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria has been testing a program in several African countries. The fund buys high-quality anti-malaria drugs and then sells them to wholesalers at a deep discount. Stanford economist Kenneth Arrow says the idea is to bring prices down so people don't turn to cheaper and less effective alternatives.
To counterfeit drugs to the old drugs that no longer work, to witchcraft, or to nothing.
In most countries, he says, it's worked. Arrow estimates it would cost about $500 million a year to take the pilot global. So far, the funding has come mostly from Europe. Arrow says to continue, the program needs support from the U.S. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up 0.25% in Singapore, down 0.3% right now in London, 0.2% lower in Frankfurt. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow added 53 points to close at 13,593, which is the highest close since December of 2007.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
1 year ago today, not far from where I sit right now, a movement began. It started when protesters took over a park in the heart of New York's financial district and demanded that the world pay attention to the 99%. But 1 year later, do Wall Streeters think the Occupy Wall Street movement accomplished anything? Our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore asked them.
Occupy Wall Street never really developed a single cause, but in the mind of many, the movement did take aim at a single target.
We had Wall Street bankers take other people's money and gamble with it, bring our economy to its knees. Are you okay with that?
It turns out a lot of people weren't okay with that, even on Wall Street. John Taft is the CEO of RBC Wealth Management, which manages $500 billion on behalf of rich clients.
I found Occupy Wall Street to be an educational moment for me. It was a shot across the bow.
Taft wrote a book this year urging Wall Street executives to abandon greed in favor of serving their clients.
Occupy Wall Street was just a harbinger of much more serious social unrest we could experience if we don't address the whole issue of income inequality.
Barry Ritholtz is the CEO of the financial research firm Fusion IQ and a popular blogger. He's wanted Wall Street to change for a long time.
I had my little Occupy Wall Street banner up on the blog for a couple of weeks.
But he took it down because he was disappointed that the movement didn't deliver.
Man, you guys had a real potential to impact change, to really affect things, and you blew it. I'm sorry if you don't want to hear that, but that's just the reality.
It's the criticism you would expect from Wall Street types. The occupiers didn't have enough ambition. That said, people on Wall Street acknowledge something is broken.
I don't think anybody's happy with the system, including the people who were in these banks.
Herb Allison is the former CEO of Merrill Lynch and helped the government with the bailouts like TARP and Fannie Mae. He says changing the system requires more political will because
greed will always be with us. There's greed in all sectors of society.
He's pushing for a breakup of big banks like the one he used to work for. That's one cause Occupy Wall Street would have been happy to support. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
And finally, you can always tell a bottle of Heineken from other beer bottles because it's a little shorter and it's green. Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, the green will stay, but the short part is going away as Heineken starts launching a new bottle with a longer neck this week. Heineken says the taller bottle aims to convey masculinity and pride. The beer inside the bottle will not change. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.